Sheer Factor by Gary Davidson, an audiobook read by a guy doing an impression of Rusty the Rooster from The Friendly Giant. Chapter 5, Dual Citizen, October 2005.
After getting the wave through by the secretary of the Prime Minister's office, who was not a secretary in the administrative assistant sense, but in a parliamentary sense, Andy cracked the door and stuck his head through. "You wanted to see me, boss?" Harper motioned him inside and then to the seat opposite his desk. Andy had to walk between two rows of comfortable chairs before getting to the tight, hard seats opposite the boss's desk. He'd never been called here before, but he had heard that if it was going to be a good meeting, then the boss joined you on the comfy chairs ahead of the desk. If it was going to be a bad one, then you sat opposite him at the desk. "Communications tells me you haven't sent out the letters yet," boss began. "No niceties, no how are you, no small talk at all. Straight to the issue." Andy thought about playing dumb. It usually was the best tactic, but he knew it wouldn't work here. Not with him. Not with the boss. "I'm not comfortable with it," Andy said. "Why?" the boss asked. There was something about his eyes. The dead eyes of a killer or of someone with a really good hand in poker. They told Andy that the boss already knew the answers to the questions he was about to say. "Well," Andy gulped. It felt like this could be his last minute in Ottawa. Like he was about to be fired. "My father is American." "So?" the boss said, quickly, dismissively, without hesitation. "Well," Andy hesitated, "I think this is one of those situations where I'm in a bit of a glass house here." "Because you have dual citizenship," the boss said. It wasn't a question, it was a statement. "Well, yeah," Andy nodded. "If I accuse Mikhail Jean of being untrustworthy because she's half French, then aren't I a hypocrite?" "Who knows you're a dual citizen?" the boss asked. "No one has asked," Andy said. It was obfuscation, and he knew it. A semantics game that someone who doesn't want to be caught says as though it justifies not releasing something a lot of people might consider important. "Good," the boss said. "Keep it that way." "But there are no buts here, Andy." The boss leaned in. "I'm the leader, and I run on issues of leadership. I've made being 100% Canadian a thing about leadership with Ignatieff and Dion. I'm making them so about Jean because whatever is different between me and them is what I attack." "Right, but listen to me," the boss said flatly, ending it. "The next generation of leader in this party, Baird, Kenny, or even maybe somehow you. They aren't me. They'll have to base their attacks on the difference between them and their enemy. That's how this works." Andy sat there, not sure how to rationalize this. "Okay, but what if someone figures it out?" Andy said. "What if I'm caught having lied about this?" "Have you lied?" the boss said. "No one has asked," Andy said. "Isn't that a lie of omission?" The boss looked at him. "Good God, man, you're starting to sound like one of them now." He shrugged as though suddenly changing mental gears and leaned in again. "You're a good Catholic boy, right?" "Sure," Andy said. "I like to think so. They got everyone so twisted up right now, half the time we don't even know what to say anymore because they'll attack us on everything." Boss was right. That's what they do. They tried it 3 times with him. He continued. "They're out to make us look like a bunch of racists. But all we want is to make sure that people who come to Canada are good Canadians. Old stock Canadians. People who fit in. People who share our values." "But not everyone who comes here shares Canada's values," Andy countered. Was the sort of thing people threw in his face all the time, and he was curious what the boss's response would be. "Not everyone in Canada shares Canada's values," the boss boomed. "That's why we say it that way." The boss took a breath, and then he continued. "You're a good Catholic boy, so I'm guessing you're against abortion, right?" "Uh-huh," Andy nodded. "You don't want the state to pay for it, promote it, or provide it, right?" "I don't want people to have them," Andy said. "Abortion is murder." "Exactly," the boss said. "And you can't say that without someone attacking you because it interferes with their rights. But in a free society, you should be able to say that, shouldn't you?" Andy said, unsure if this was a trap or not. "Sure?" The boss's fist hit the desktop, causing him to jump. "Damn right you should!" He boomed again. "And they should be able to say what they want. And then we should debate it. And then people should be allowed to vote as they believe. And in a free society, that would be fine. Are we going to do that?" "Don't be an idiot," the boss snapped. "The bar will have to move to the opposite zone of the field for that conversation to ever happen in the house." "Oh," said Andy, deflated. "That's the point, Andy." The boss looked at him like he should be getting it now. "Progressives don't want you to say those things, and they don't want to discuss them. Do you know why?" "Because it's an emotional issue, and people don't think straight when debating emotional issues." The boss looked at him. At one point, his jaw even hung a bit slack. Well, as slack as his stiff expression would permit. "No," he said quietly, calmly, and in many ways far more menacingly. "Because it's easier to control the discussion if they demonize you with censorship." Andy thought that through, but it was obvious he still wasn't getting it. Despite what he felt personally and through his faith, society had already decided it was a woman's choice. That was a law in Canada. What right did he have to change that? Laws change all the time, the boss said. Unlike your people, the Americans, well, your other people. In Canada, we have a living tree doctrine. As the opinion of society changes, the laws are supposed to follow. The dialogue can change. The tolerance can change. The bar can move more progressively or responsibly. The boss stared right at him. I want to change it so that one day people like you can discuss these things openly without being accused of being homophobic, racist, or intolerant. Because the only form of intolerance I can't stand is censorship. The conversation seemed to stall there, and Andy sat for a moment, waiting for the boss to either get to the reason he was called in or to dismiss him. Okay, look, the boss said as he leaned back. You don't want to be a hypocrite. Fine, I applaud you for that. How about we treat your letter as an exploration? What now? Andy was confused. How could he attack Mikhail Jean without it seeming like an attack? Let's say, instead of accusing her of having divided loyalties, you just ask the voters in your riding whether dual citizenship is a concern to them. And he could see the wheels in the boss's head spinning furiously, and once again he was amazed at how smart the boss was. We'll get the communication team to tweak this a bit, but how about your letter says something like, does it bother you that she is a dual citizen? Would it bother you if instead of French citizenship, she held U.S. citizenship? And he thought about this a second. You're not condemning her that way, not directly, and it'll also let you gauge how the people in your riding will feel when they eventually find out you're half American. Do you have a problem with me being half American, boss? Of course not, the boss said. You're one of us.